Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spannersready, and I'm joined by Matt Trumpets. How's it going, Matt?
Oh, it's going great. Are you kidding me? I've been looking forward to the show ever since you told me who was going to be on it.
Well, that's right. We put on social media, who'd like to see Matthew Carter back? And I think that was our most liked tweet of all time. So Matthew Carter, ex-Lotus team boss, is here waiting in the wings. And I'm well aware that that's what people are here for. But first, I've just got a little bit of Missed Apex admin to sort out. Firstly, we are going to be here next Sunday at 8 p.m. to do our season finale race review at Abu Dhabi before we get into our winter program. We're going to be with you all winter, so we're going to ask you to stick with us and stay subscribed over winter as well. Lots of kind of off-topic F1 chat, as well as looking forward to the new season as well. Also, on Tuesday night at 8 p.m, we are going to be doing the first Missed Apex iRacing session. So Tuesday night, 8 p.m, if you are an iRacer, come along and join us. You have to just go to iRacing and search for Map Race, and the password will be Spanners. So feel free to jump in there. We'll have the chat open as well, and it will be good times. And also, while I've got your attention, why not consider going to patreon.com/missedapex and checking out what you can get by being a patron. But we're joined by ex-Lotus team boss Matthew Carter. How's it going, Matthew?
Very good. How are you?
Good, thank you. It was great chatting to you over text after the last race when the Ocon, Verstappen incident happened, because of course you have been in a similar position to Christian Horner. Firstly though, let's get your take on that Ocon Verstappen incident, because people were very quick to jump down Ocon's throat. I'm team Ocon. I know everybody else was kind of team Max in that situation. How did you call it? And then how did you find yourself when you were in that similar position?
If I was allowed to call it 50-50, I probably would have called it 50-50. Nope. But I appreciate that's against the rules of the podcast. I honestly would place the blame with Verstappen.
Oh, go on, tell us why. Go on, tell us why.
Just because if you look at exactly what happened, and I thought it was interesting. I don't know if you saw Lewis talking to him in the cool down room afterwards, when he said something along the lines of, dude, you're the one that's got more to lose than him, which is exactly it. I mean, there's history between the two of them. You have to remember that. And for sure, when he saw Ocon coming at him, well, from both sides, I would say. So I'm sure Ocon realized it was Verstappen and that he was going quicker than him and he was going to try and put a move on him just for his own vanity. And I think that Verstappen saw him coming and thought, there's no way I'm going to allow him to go past me, and close the door on him. And he did close the door on him quite hard in a typical Verstappen. And I think there's a little bit of petulance there as well from Verstappen. I think there's a little bit of I'm entitled. People have talked a lot this season about the fact that he, when he goes into those situations, people back out because they know he's not going to give. And I know people will say it's a Senna-Schumacher type of attitude, but unfortunately, every so often, it's going to lead to him crashing out of a race lead like that.
Maybe has he got it into his head? Has he kind of bought into his own hype that people will definitely jump out of the way because he is, after all, Max Verstappen?
Well, I can't speak for him, obviously, but that's certainly what I see on track a lot. And I think, you know, you listen to the way that he talks back to the team over the radio and just the way that he puts his car in places that I think probably because he's not actually fighting for the title. And if next year, fingers crossed, Red Bull get their act together and he's fighting for the title, then maybe he'll, at the risk of the haters, grow up a little bit. But I genuinely think he should have backed out. He should have let Ocon go past. He would have had DRS down the next straight. He could have taken him then. Ocon's tyres, if they were only going to be good for another few laps, he would have got him at some point. So I think he should have probably been the bigger person in the corner and backed out.
Tell us a little bit about when you were in this situation, because you were, of course, were the team boss when Grosjean did a similar thing with a backmarker.
Similar. Obviously, Grosjean wasn't leading the race, but what happened was it actually goes to the race before. So it happened in Canada in 2015. But it actually went to the race before that, or maybe two races before that. There was a lot of problems with, or a lot of discussions between the drivers regarding backmarkers observing blue flags. And all the drivers sat in their room and they were particularly annoyed with the two manners. They were catching them reasonably regularly at most Grand Prix. So there was a big discussion in the drivers meeting, I think after Monaco and before Montreal, where they talked about the blue flags and they talked about how drivers were going to respect them a little bit more, et cetera, et cetera. So Monaco was obviously difficult because you can't overtake there. And if they don't move out the way, it makes it very, very difficult. Yeah. Roman had a huge crash in Monaco, if you remember, with the aforementioned Verstappen smashed into him at the end of the straight, trying to overtake him. So Roman wasn't in the best of moods because he probably should have got some points in Monaco. Fast forward to Montreal, and we had probably our best qualifying that we'd ever had while I was in charge. So the two cars qualified fifth and sixth. I think from memory, there was something wrong with Vettel's Ferrari, so he wasn't in the top. So otherwise, it was the usual suspects with the top four. And then we were fifth and sixth, with Roman fifth and Pastor sixth. So it was a great qualifying for us. And then the race started to pan out in a similar way. And from memory, again, Roman was either fifth or sixth, and he came up behind the manners and felt over the radio quite vehemently that they didn't move out the way fast enough for him. Eventually, they let him through, and he continued on his race, and then he came in to do his pit stop, and he came out behind specifically Will Stevens again. And I think he came out on faster tyres, and Will Stevens was obviously considerably slower, and he came over the radio, and he was getting more and more agitated. As the lap was going on, he was effing and blinding down the radio. He was telling us to tell Charlie Whiting that this is a joke, that Stevens obviously hadn't been listening in the driver meeting, et cetera, et cetera. And then he came down the final, the back straight, if you like. So there's a chicane that leads into the pit straight. And he came down that back straight. And as he overtook him, he then sharply turned in to the left as a kind of back off, sod you kind of a maneuver. So he was, they were kind of side by side, and he veered in like that to kind of give him a warning, but slightly misjudged it. And Stevens' front wing hit Roman's rear left tire, literally at the chicane. So he was at the entrance to the pit. So Roman came over the radio blaming Stevens, had to come into the pits again, even though he'd just been in three or four laps before. The stewards had judged it to be his fault, and he got a 5-second drive-through penalty. Still managed to finish the race in 10th with Pastor in 7th. But yeah, so that whole backmarkers not being entitled to be there, they shouldn't be there, they should get out the way, I'm trying to get on with my race kind of mentality was exactly what was going on in his head.
What on earth do you say to a driver in that situation? Because that is the kind of thing you expect when you've been held up on the A14 or something like that for a long time, and you've got to show that truck that took slightly too long to overtake the other truck to just cut in like in front. And you often wonder how that doesn't end up in a collision more often. But to see it from a professional athlete in that sport, I mean, you must have been sat there with your head in your hands.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, but it's very, very difficult because you do need that. You need that little bit of aggression, that little bit of something a little bit dynamic in a race driver. He needs to be, you know, as the famous Senna quotes, if you don't go for the gap or whatever, you know, but there needs to be that edge to them, but you also need to curb it and contain it. And you also need to be able to say to them, look, you know, as Hamilton said to Verstappen in the cool down room last weekend, you know, you've got more to lose than him. You know, what are you gaining by swerving in front of Will Stevens? But you could see the build-up as well. So you could see the build-up had come over. That was why my answer was a little bit longer than it should have been, maybe. But you can see the build-up from race to race to race. It was constantly, it was building in their heads. Both he and Pastor that season had collided with each other a couple of times. And there was a lot of tension between the two of them. And I'd had a meeting with the two of them beforehand and said, look, we've qualified fifth and sixth. This is a great opportunity here for us to get some big points. We were sort of toing and froing with Force India over fifth place in the championship at the time, which is huge. I mean, if we'd have beaten Force India, it was another 10 million that we would have got at the end of the season, round figures. So I remember talking to the two of them beforehand and saying, look, just keep it clean. You know, we've got quick cars, you know, nothing's going to happen on the first lap. You know, you can take your time. But he just got more and more, you know, he felt that his strategy was being thrown off by this manner, blocking him or not pulling over. So it was going to affect his race. It was going to affect how his strategy was going to play out. So,
but is it a bit like with my kids this morning? Because he has this habit of running out into the road and stopping just before the road, and it frightens all the cars. And like, I had a really long chat with him, and he did it within 20 minutes of our trip out. And you kind of go, what did I just say? What were you there with Roman Grosjean saying, what did we just talk about?
A little bit of that. Yeah. There's a little bit, but I had it a lot with Roman. He did. There was quite a few things that he managed to drop the ball on.
Right. Well, I understand how you have taken this incident apart, but for me, what sticks in my head most is that essentially Ocon was a lapped runner, and while they were even into turn one, and I think he has every right to push it, when you fast forward to where they actually collided, it was Verstappen's rear wheel and Ocon's front wheel, which to me says the battle was basically over. So my question is,
Can we just say that question is being asked based on a factually incorrect thing? So I will note that objection for the future.
Go back and look at where the contact
was. Yes, I have done. They were very much alongside. They weren't. It wasn't a nose in.
It was Verstappen's rear wheel, and it was Ocon's front wheel.
All right. That's well, okay. Well, if you want to continue under that wrong premise, do continue.
My question to you is, do you think that in the instance where you're talking about essentially a lapped car, does the responsibility devolve on the person being lapped to just think better of continuing that battle to a point where there might be a collision? Or would you prefer for that fight to go on as if they were fighting for an actual track position?
It's a reasonable thing to say, but yes, they have to fight as if it was a fight for a track position, because the rules state that he's allowed to take himself. If he's going faster than the leader, he's allowed to unlap himself. So if he's allowed to unlap himself, therefore, the normal rules of engagement need to apply. And the normal rules of engagement would say that Verstappen had to give him a car's width and he didn't. And to go back to both of you, and I don't want to be the referee in the middle, but if you look at the damage on Verstappen's car, it was the floor between the two wheels. So it certainly wasn't front wheel to rear wheel.
Yeah, Spanners wins. Look, I want to get back.
I don't know exactly where the collision happened and how, but all I know is that Verstappen should have given Ocon enough room, and he didn't. If you look at he didn't give him a car's width. If he was fighting for the lead, if he was fighting for a normal race position, then he should give him a car's width, and he didn't give him a car's width. He closed the door. Maybe he felt Ocon should have backed out. You know, we go back to the sense of entitlement, whether that comes from being a race leader or it comes from being Max Verstappen, I don't know. But I think there was a sense of entitlement that he felt he'd done enough, and therefore Ocon should back out. Ocon is trying to prove himself. We can't forget that. Ocon is driving for his career at the moment. You know, he's trying to prove to everyone around him that he's a good racer. He knows that he can. I'm going to upset people again, but he knows in his head from back in Formula 3 or Formula 4 that he can out-race or out-wheel-to-wheel drive Max Verstappen, or that's what he thinks at least, because he did it. So therefore, I think his brain probably melted a little bit as well, and he thought, well, hang on a minute, you know, if I was in a Mercedes, this would be a genuine battle, and this is what I can do.
Definitely, maybe one we're going to definitely see in the future. I do want to go back a little bit though into the past, and just what do you say? Because obviously in the race, the engineer just said to Verstappen, "All right, mate, come on, chin up, let's carry on." But there is a cool down for him as he's driving around. But surely as a team boss as well, you've got to think about your cool down, because you've got to be just fuming. And then there's that time before that. And was he out of the race at that point?
No. So as I say, he literally, it happened at the entrance to the pit. So he came over the radio effing and blinding and saying that Stevens had pulled across him. He then drove straight down the pit lane. So it happened at the entrance to the pit. He drove down the pit lane, We serviced the car. We put four new tyres on it quickly and got him back out into the race. Then the stewards adjudged that it was his fault and he got a 5-second stop go after that. So his initial reaction was, it was Stevens' fault. He pulled across on me. What the hell is he doing? Et cetera, et cetera. As I intimated before, there was previous with Roman with that. I mean, he crashed once under the safety car trying to warm his tyres up and blamed the engineer for talking to him too much. And, you know, it's the old driver's book of excuses. So initially he came in and said what the hell was going on. He then got told about his penalty. By the time he actually finished the race and he came over and he came back into hospitality where I was, he'd completely calmed down and he knew it was his fault and he apologized.
Yeah.
At that stage, I don't know what else you can say. I mean, he apologized. We went off into the engineer's office and we had a conversation, me, he, and Pastor. And at the time it was just, you know, I just told him how disappointed I was. Laid it on the line that, you know, this was an important race for us in terms of the number of points that we could have got over Force India, that we'd effectively thrown away a fifth or a sixth position. So he knew that he'd done wrong, but heat of the battle, red mist, all those things, it's difficult to... And as I said, you need a little bit of that in a race driver.
He seems like such a nice, measured bloke out of the car. Did you notice there was like a Jekyll and Hyde? Or was he, you know, like Eric Banner and the Hulk in and out?
He was like it in and out the car, to be fair. He could be a little bit like that. I remember one... I can't remember where it was. I think it was in Dubai that I was having dinner with Julian Palmer in the hotel on a Saturday evening, let's say. And Roman was sitting on a table 5 places away from us. And I went over to him and said, why don't you come and join us? And he said, no, I don't want to come and sit over there while you're sitting with Julian, the guy who drives my car on a Friday.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. So he flatly refused. Julian left and went to bed at maybe 9:30 or whatever. And then Roman came over and sat with me. But he literally wouldn't sit and have dinner at the same table as. I mean, you have to remember that the only people that they have to beat is their teammate or their, you know. And we were, I think I've discussed this before, because of Pastor's contract with the Venezuelans, PDVSA, we weren't allowed to take the car off of Pastor on a Friday morning. Julian had paid for 10 Friday mornings practice. So the only car we could give was Roman's. Roman was ahead in the championship. Roman was effectively our first driver. And yet I had to give his car to Julian on a Friday. And that affected, according to Roman, that would affect his whole race weekend because he didn't get, you know, he didn't go through his normal routine on a Friday. So hatred's a very harsh word, but his lack of understanding of the bigger picture, if you like, he was all about himself and wanting to prove himself and I guess trying to look up the ladder. I mean, he's always said when he went to Haas that he's thinking of Ferrari and he's thinking of his own career, which is only short in sport. So they've got to look out for themselves a little bit.
That is a fascinating insight into the driver mentality, because we always wonder whether the guys are giving up their seat willingly or whether there's some kind of system. Like, we've noticed Alonso has been giving up his seat because he's on the way out.
That's because he's out. So
I mean, that's fascinating. It's not like, oh, I'm supporting the up and coming young drivers. It's fully, that is my car, don't break it, I hate you.
I hated it. Julian used to say, as he was pulling out on a Friday, so Roman used to sit on the pit wall next to me on a Friday morning because he'd sit and look at the data and analyze the data. Julian said to me many times, the first thing he saw when he looked up out of his visor was Roman sitting on the pit wall, giving him daggers down the, you know, like literally staring daggers at him. So, and Julian's there to prove himself. So Julian wants to push the car. It's a difficult
one. Well, that's bad, because Julian seems like one of the nicest drivers in the paddock as well.
Yeah, nice guys finish last, though. I mean, everybody that walks into that car is your potential competitor. Why would you want to give them, do them any favors whatsoever? And yeah, I mean, there are probably guys like Lewis or Fernando who are, you know, they pretty much believe their own hype and they're not so worried about stuff like that. But if you're a guy like Grosjean, who already got kicked down the ladder once and had to fight his way back, you're always going to be feeling kind of insecure whenever anyone else gets to take your ride out and put in some lap times, even if it is Julian Palmer.
I don't know about the even if bit, but yeah, anyway, it was, yes. But yeah, that mentality is, it's a difficult one to deal with, but drivers are special, shall we say.
You've seen these battles firsthand. It's really easy for us sitting on the sofa to say, oh, Palmer's rubbish because he didn't do well against Hulkenberg, or Grosjean has underperformed in certain ways. But for you, I suppose you've gotten a much more of a picture. Because you remember how Magnussen got really kind of taken down at McLaren by because he didn't do well against Button. But then he's... Yep. Have I got that right? It was against Button, wasn't it, Magnussen?
Yeah.
Then... Now he's up against Grosjean, who people do generally consider to be quick, and they seem fairly even. But you've got quite a unique perspective on that.
Yeah, I mean, I have a perspective from Lotus and from a slightly smaller team. But there's many other things that come into play. So certainly for us at Lotus, and I'm sure we've discussed this before, both cars aren't the same when it comes to practice or qualifying or the race day. I don't think it's the same in the likes of Mercedes, Ferrari and Red Bull, but certainly at Lotus, you know, we would maybe only have one front wing. So we developed a new front wing that was supposed to show a few tenths of a gain, and we'd only have one of them. So then you have to decide whose car it goes on, or one floor, or one, you know, whatever it may be, you've only got one. So you need to decide where you're going to put that and who's going to get it. And that's going to upset one or other of the drivers for sure, because as far as Pasta, as far as Maldonado was concerned and his entourage, he was giving such a huge amount of money to the team that it was down to him, the fact that we were racing. So therefore he should get the best of the best. So I used to have Daddy Maldonado in my face, who couldn't speak any English, effing and blinding in Spanish at me and telling me that his son should have this, that, and the other. So yeah, it's difficult.
So this brings up an interesting point, which I think, and I hate to give him credit, but which Spanners has made in the past, which is there's been sort of this interesting shift towards drivers as customers of team rather than drivers as drivers for teams. And is that kind of what you're getting at there?
You mean because they bring so much money to the team?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, to a certain extent. I think that I think that's probably always been the case. I know, again, don't underestimate the amount that Fernando Alonso took to McLaren with his Santander deal, or that he took to Ferrari. Santander followed him to Ferrari because they were giving him a huge, they were giving McLaren and Ferrari a huge amount of money. So they do have a say. You know, it's a business as well as a sport, which I know people don't want to hear, but that's the fact of it. And certainly at Lotus, if Maldonado had pulled their $30 million of sponsorship money, then, you know, it would have been a much more difficult thing for us to deal with. And the same, Williams are going through it now. I'm sure we'll get onto it later on, but Williams are going through that same, they're going through that same, you know, money versus talent versus, you know, I'm sure that Claire, in fact, I know that Claire has been in a very difficult position with Lance for the last 2 years because the amount of money that's coming in from him and what they want to say to him and they want him to do, and yet their hands are tied a little bit because they don't want to upset him to the extent that he walks away with his checkbook.
Did you ever hear my Williams parody of Money, All About the Money?
All About the Money, yes, I did, yeah.
Hang on, it's a little clip.
Mist Apex Podcast. Just thinking about paid drivers. Just feels like these days, I don't know. Seems like every seat's got a price. I wonder how they sleep at night. When the cash comes first and the points come second, just stop for a minute and drive. Why is Paddy so serious? Acting so damn mysterious.
Chatroom's getting upset.
On your side.
I've got the fader.
So low that you can't even tell us.
You're not going to give me one
why?
Chorus.
Hold the rest up to your left. Pascal Wehrlein to your right. But did you see that? Yeah, we signed a paid driver tonight. It's all about the money, money, money. We just want your money, money, money. We don't worry about the lap times.
Okay, some of the chat room looks genuinely angry there. So, so yeah, they're in that hard situation with Stroll. But how much power does the third driver have when they come in? So Jolyon Palmer, I'm assuming that there was some cash even as a reserve driver. So how do you treat him? Because you desperately don't want this young, if not talented driver to break your car. But does he go in there with, like, you know, orders? I do not push. Because we're always looking at these young guys and seeing what times they do. But are they driving to different instructions?
The short answer is yes, they are. Well, not different instructions. They're driving two instructions. So Fridays are important to the teams in terms of learning about the tyres, learning about long runs, learning about aero, et cetera, et cetera. So they have to follow the programme, which sometimes doesn't involve being on the fastest tyre on the lowest fuel load at any one time. In terms of how much power third drivers have, I can go back to the season before where I signed Charles Peak as our third driver.
Ah.
And he was the guy that actually had the bailiffs in the garage at Spa after we got our podium, attempting to seize all our goods because he was owed money. And that was because he had also, so prior to 2014 season, I signed Charles to do the same as Jolyn, actually, similar deal. So again, he paid cash and he paid to have 10 Friday mornings. Pasta had in his contract that we couldn't take the car away from him, so therefore we had Roman. And 2014, as I'm sure everyone remembers, was such a terrible season in terms of the new hybrid engine. It was breaking all the time. We'd had zero testing. We'd had zero running. And basically all my engineers said, you cannot take Roman out of the car on a Friday because it's going to kill our race weekend. It's going to kill him, it's going to kill everything that we're trying to learn about the car. We're learning from Roman's side of the garage, not from Pasta's side of the garage.
Ooh, interesting.
So as the season, yeah.
There's the headline. There's the excerpt.
We've talked about this before. Because with Pasta, you couldn't tell whether or not, if you put a new piece of aero on. Roman was very, very consistent with his lap times, like all the best drivers are. They're very, very consistent. Pasta was, let's say, not so consistent. He had a quick lap in him. He had a few quick laps in him, but you couldn't guarantee that he was consistent all the time. So if you go out on a run with one wing and then you bring him in and then you take him out on another wing and you're aiming for him to hit the same lap times, he couldn't do it. And you didn't know whether it's because he'd gone wide in a corner, because he decided to push a little bit more, or you had no idea whether the wing was working. So all development had to be done on Roman's side of the garage. And therefore, as the season progressed, we didn't give Charles enough Friday mornings to fulfill his contract. So he sued us.
That was
the reason that there were, and then there's a bizarre rule about in Belgium, and to do with Belgium law. And that's why it always happens in Belgium that these things come to a head. So in Belgium, they could seize. So you go to the court in Belgium and you tell them that you're owed money. And as long as you prove that you're owed money, they'll allow you to seize assets. So it quite often happens at Spa. So he'd done that and he went and he stopped us from leaving Spa until we paid him, basically.
Wow. I think you have told us parts of that story before, but maybe I'm just slow. But that's the first time I'm sort of piecing it all together. In the chat room here, Osman Selim, and hello chat room, by the way, you can get in touch with us and join in the live chat by going to YouTube and searching Missed Apex Podcast. Sarah's saying it's very interesting about Spa, that's the reason that happens there so often. And it was Selim, who said, Roman, one of the best drivers? That's the comment he's got stuck on there. Do you put him in that top echelon? I think there's a lot of people who hope he is. How top?
How big is the top echelon? How many drivers do you want to go down?
I don't know.
I would say, and this is just based on not necessarily being his boss. This is just based on what I see. I would put him probably in the top half of the grid at the moment. If they were all in the same car, I would put him in the top half of the grid for sure. He and Kimi were fairly neck and neck in 2013. I know Kimi scored much more points, which I know is going to get pointed out. But in terms of pace, they were fairly similar in 2013. Roman obviously had his big shunt at the start in Spa, and then got a ban. But he was also very much the junior driver then. This was before my time, but I know that he used to come onto the radio and ask if he could be allowed to go past Kimi. You know, they had that Roman is faster than you type comment. I think Roman is super consistent. He's quick. There's no denying that. I think he's put himself up against Magnussen as being at least as good, if not on his day, probably a little bit better, I would say. He was fairly level with Kimi. The point's going to say different, but again, Kimi had all the better upgrades, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I think he's up there. Let's put it that way. He's definitely in the top 10. I'd probably put him in the top 6 on the grid at the moment.
Okay, let's do a game. Let's make it a game. Quick fire. Would Romain Grosjean beat Daniel Ricciardo?
No.
Vettel?
No.
So, see, I think that puts us right in. That's nearly putting us in the bottom half. Controversial. Yeah. Going to get hate from the German fans here. But top half. You put him still solidly top half.
Okay. Yeah. It's difficult to say because you've never seen him in the car against those people. But
wild speculation. Come on. This, are you new?
Wild speculation. I would, in that case, the reason I paused much longer, in that case, if you want some wild speculation, I would say potentially better than Vettel in similar machinery. I don't think Ricciardo, because I've got a lot of respect for Ricciardo and the way that he drives and the way that he handles a car, and I'm super interested to see how he gets on in Renault.
See, I'm gonna let Matt ask a question because I can write all the blurb and the show summaries now. Thanks. Grosjean would beat Vettel, according to Matthew Carter.
Easily.
Yes. Convincingly. There's your clickbait.
I love that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, I've waffled enough with my kind of driver politicky behind the scenes type stuff. Matt would like to ask you some questions, I think, about the recent goings on at Liberty. I don't understand any of it. It was a wall of text that you put in the notes, Matt, so I've just replied TLDR and I'm going to click the screen where I am no longer present.
All right, then. This shouldn't take more than, 2.5 or 3 hours to wade through. I don't know what the problem is.
It's okay. I'll write some new rap cover lyrics just for Baja Matia Matt in the chat room.
No, there was an investor call. Greg Maffei and Chase Carey were on it. They were asked some questions. And since you're not only a businessman, but also a Formula One boss, I thought it would be interesting to get your perspective on some of the topics that came up and some of the things that they said. And they started off just talking a lot about how much money they made, how much debt they have. And let's just assume that they've used clever enough accounting that it looks like things are going well for them at the moment, because that's pretty much what all the clever people do. But in terms of here's what I know about business. If I really wanted to be a businessman, I'd get a business, I'd borrow enough money to buy everything. And then when I couldn't make the debt payments anymore, all the money I'd paid myself, I'd get to keep. And then I'd write it. Everything else would be written off as bankrupt. And then I would be rich pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. But this is also why I ask people who are actually in business their opinion on things, because I realize that's probably not how it works in the real world. With regard to TV attendance, they said they made a big deal about live attendance being up 3% year over year at the 16 tracks where they had comparable data. And they said that television viewing on race day is down 5%, and that's primarily due to going to pay TV. None of that is a real surprise to me, but what do you think about the 3% increase at the 16 tracks day? They had comparable data on. Is that meaning that some of the stuff that they're doing at the track is beginning to work, or would you look at that as an investor and go, well, that's just sort of a standard deviation, and I'm not really impressed by that?
The short answer is that I'm not really impressed by that. I think 3% is such a small number. You have to remember that. And I'll try not to be too cynical, but this was an investor call or an investor meeting or an investor conversation. So by nature of that, Liberty borrowed the money to buy Formula One from investors. They now have to prove to those investors that it was a sound investment that they made. And it probably was. I'm sure it will be. But they have to now big themselves up and big up the job that they're doing. From the limited bits and pieces that I saw from the call, they managed to put Bernie down quite considerably at every opportunity they could, and how they bought a poison chalice almost, and that they'd there was lots of skeletons in the cupboard that they weren't aware of. A 3% rise in live people going to the venues can be down to a lot of different things. It can be down to economics in the countries where they go to. It can be down to people having more money in the countries that they go to. It can be down to the fact that it was a more interesting season this season, with two different teams racing, Ferrari and Mercedes, instead of it just being Mercedes. So and 3%, as I said right from the outset, is a very small number. In terms of people watching the TV, again, yeah, I'm sure the paywall does affect things. My general overview of the whole thing is that it's a lot of waffle from people that are trying to justify a $6 billion purchase to their investors. I think they are slowly getting things right at Liberty, but I think slowly is the word. They talked a lot about promoters putting on a better show, I believe, as well, and that they wanted the promoters to get involved in putting on a better show, which is good, which is great, and that's going to increase the live audiences for sure. But my honest opinion is, I think they're trying to fix something. This is going to be controversial. They're trying to fix something that wasn't necessarily broken. I think Bernie's business model had a lot of people that put it down, but he earned an awful lot of money for CVC. And if Liberty could earn the money that he earned for CVC for their investors, then their investors would be very, very happy. But they're trying to do it, and they're also trying to keep the fans happy, trying to keep the teams happy, trying to keep everything happy.
Okay, well, I was going to follow up and ask, because they mentioned U.S. and China figures for viewing being up 50 and 265%. But I have a bigger question now that I want to ask you, which is, it seems to me that really that Liberty have this property for a different reason than Bernie had this property. And that, yes. And that's what we're really talking about at this point. Liberty see this through a different lens than Bernie sees it.
100%. Well, Liberty, the clue is in the name of the company. It's Liberty Media. So they're there for the media. They're there for the eyeballs. They're there for, my understanding is, they're going to gradually.
Matthew, is that a dog snoring at your feet?
Yes.
Well done, chat room. You called it right. Sorry, I'll leave you alone.
Seriously?
Yeah, they can hear that. It's cool. It's a feature, not a bug. There he is. Oh, don't wake him up. Oh, look at that. Also, the people want their Christmas lights on. Oh, look at you. Who's a good podcasting boy? All right, sorry. I'll leave you alone. I'll let the grown-ups talk.
I can't remember where I got to now. I think that, yeah, so they're Liberty Media. They're there to... I don't think this is confidential, but I think that what their game plan is to gradually work away from standard TV and to bring everyone over onto the internet. Okay, the fact that you're nodding says that it's not confidential. Good. I wasn't sure whether I'd heard that from somewhere that I shouldn't be talking about. But yeah, I think that their general game plan is to put everything onto their own, to get everyone to subscribe to their own F1 app and to get the viewers through that. And therefore, by doing that, simple numbers show that the amount of people that watch an F1 race on a weekend, if they all subscribe to their application, if they all watch it through the application, then they're going to make a huge amount of money. That's my understanding. The peripheral stuff around that is the show and the engines and the noise and the cost cutting. And my honest opinion is that they're just blah, 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 because they don't really understand. They're doing all sorts of focus groups that are saying, we want faster cars, but we want more noise, but it has to be hybrid. And they're trying to answer all questions to all people, and they're not really answering any questions from any people, if that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. And in essence, it's an interesting reflection of the sport itself, because there will always be compromises involved when push comes to shove. When you have to set the car up, you have to make choices about what you're prioritizing in terms of where you get your lap time from. And what kind of efficiencies you have with your engine, where the power bands lay in the gear ratios you choose. And really where they are is they're trying to find a compromise that doesn't inherently break what they've bought.
Yeah.
And that's hard because that gives the teams more leverage and input than I think they would really like to allow them. But also, they're in a hard place. The only person they have working for them who really understands things in any way, shape, or form is Ross Brawn.
Yep.
So they're very dependent on that. But they brought up, the new sponsors and stuff like that. But I think probably something you would like to talk about very much is they brought up the business model with regards to Force India, and it's going into and out of administration. And they said they need a healthier business model. The business model isn't what it can or should be, but that there are 10 different perspectives as to what the details on that should be. And we had sort of an interesting pre-conversation about this. So what should happen to make the sport better and to make the business model work from your point of view as an F1 boss and then from your point of view as a business person?
Answer all 17 of those questions in order, no pausing.
It was
the the business model for the teams, I think, generally does work as long as the teams are clever about what they want to do. And again, I know this is not necessarily what the fans want to hear, but I think the likes of a Force India and even a Renault need to realize that they are fighting for fourth, fifth, sixth place in the championship. And as long as they realize that and that they gauge themselves for that, then that's fine. The problem arises when teams are fighting for fourth, fifth, and sixth, but they actually think that they can compete with Red Bull, Ferrari, and Mercedes. And I think that's what happened to Force India. I think, well, obviously, Force India is slightly different because there's a whole Vijay Mallya legal issue, money thing in India. But I think that what happens is that if they realize that that's where they're fighting, then that's fine. But the minute that they try and overstep the mark, the minute they think, well, hang on a minute, we'll just throw another 10 million at this, we'll throw another 15 million at this, or if we just hire this driver or this engineer or whatever, it's going to push us forward. Then it starts to affect what would be a normal business model, which is, as any business has to look at it, that you've got your revenue and you've got your expenditure, and somewhere you need to make sure that your revenue is larger than your expenditure. Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull can offset that by way of saying they've got sponsorship or that they're selling road cars or that they're doing whatever. I read an interesting thing. So did you see that Renault have appointed a new, I can't remember the guy's name, they've appointed a new guy to take over from Jerome Stroll. So Jerome Stroll was Cyril's boss. They've taken on a new guy, and there was a press conference where they were talking about where they were and what they were doing. And they were explaining how they would like to get to the next level. And they were saying that they're currently, I think they said they were at $160 million spend per year. And the top teams are at least twice that. And I don't think they're going to get that signed off. I think when they sold the project to Carlos Ghosn, who is the big boss at Renault, I think that they said that that was the figure they were going to be at and that they were going to be challenging for world championships. And unfortunately, it's not going to happen because Mercedes and Ferrari and Red Bull are spending that bit extra on everything. Drivers, engine development, aero, et cetera, et cetera.
And European's got a decent question in the chat room there, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to. But knowing
are you suggesting that Matt's question wasn't a decent question?
I actually asked the chat room, are the questions okay or are they a bit trumpetsy? And it's quite split. It's quite split. The nerdier chat room people seem to like it. But there's a good question here that says, if you had £1 million to invest freely, would you invest in Liberty's model of F1?
£1 million.
Yeah, I don't know.
Buy the smallest, tiniest little.
Yeah. He's pulled a bit of a what do you call it? Dr. Evil there, hasn't he? All right, then. If you had £17 billion, I've gone the other way. If you had a reasonable amount of money,
would I invest in Liberty's model? Is that the question? Yes. As a pure way to earn money, I think that if they're doing exactly as I just suggested, if they're going down the route of we want to get people buying our app or subscribing to our app on a monthly basis, and that's how we're going to earn money, then yes, it's going to make sense. It's going to work.
Right. So first of all, it occurs to me, Spanners, we've been missing an entire whose fault is this anyway game that we could have been playing with the teams.
I love games. Let's do it.
Whose fault is Force India anyway? It didn't occur to me to blame them for their ambition exceeding their circumstances. But now that it's pointed out, I think this is a game we could potentially play.
Well, there are a few more legal ramifications around that than just whose fault it was to have a little crash on track. If I've got Peter Wright, Digital Law, sat here the whole time, then maybe. But do please carry on. After you've finished all your smart people questions, we've got some Q&A that we collected from Twitter as well.
Right. Well, you'll be happy to know that this is the last one I'm going to ask, and it's not even really an ask so much as when you mentioned like Poison Chalice earlier on, would this be a reference to things like the suddenly free Brazil Grand Prix that have cropped up,
and of course,
little presents yeah. Bernie has sort of left laying around for the new owners?
Oh, I know I do genuinely sound like a bit of a Bernie supporter or standing up for him, but you could call them surprises, and I think Liberty called it surprises in that investment call, but they spent 6 months doing due diligence. So as part of their due diligence, they would have been able to see the contracts from all the race circuits. I think they also blamed the situation at Silverstone as being what they considered to be a skeleton in the closet. But no, they should have. I don't feel sorry for them at all, because they should have done, or they did do, their due diligence. I mean, it was a $6 billion purchase. You don't walk into that with your eyes closed and just say, oh my God, look at that. We didn't realize that had happened. I'm sure that they knew about it, and I'm sure they took a measured risk on that. But now, on an investment call, it's an easy thing to say, we didn't realize, and therefore that's the reason that things aren't quite as going the way that they should be. Well, hang on a minute. That's not fair. I think things are going the way they should be, generally. I think a 3% increase in people at live races is negligible, and a drop in the TV revenue is negligible. And they've now been at it for 2 years. They need to start making some changes. You know, they need to. The next thing they need to do is to start making some changes.
Actually, go on, Matt, go on. All I was going to say was the Twitter questions lead on very nicely to this. So don't drag the good gentleman too far off topic.
No, I was actually going to go back and mention that interactions during race week are up 31%. Video views are up 66%. And they have 18.1 million followers on their social platforms, which is up 50% over last year, were the statistics that they mentioned. Given that, do you see evidence that they are sort of making progress where they want to be making progress? Or are the numbers just too mishy-mashy to really be trusted on a call like this?
Mishy-mashy. I think the numbers are genuine, and they're fine, and that's fairly easy to explain, because Bernie completely didn't believe in social media. He didn't want to believe in social media. He actively closed down anything that was on YouTube that showed a race car going around a racetrack. You look these days, they invest they actually invest into, what do you call them, YouTube influencers. They invite them to the races. They invite people to the races that have got more followers, just because they're going to go there and they're going to pop a video on YouTube. So the fact that Liberty Media are going down the media route is kind of understandable. And if they didn't do, then they really would be missing an open goal. Because Bernie had the chance to do it, and he deliberately didn't do it. You know, he actively sat there and said, I'm not interested in social media. I don't understand it. So I'm going to continue to earn money the way that I've always earned money. There's an argument to say that his business model was outdated and couldn't have survived. The counter argument to that is that it survived the whole time that he was there, and it survived right up until Liberty Media bought the sport.
Good. Some questions from Twitter. Before we go back to Liberty, Hannah asks, what's the possibility of getting Mr. Carter to a Missed Apex event? We need to see you on track.
When's the next one in Canada?
you are a man of means.
Me and Lance Stroll. versus you guys.
Who could you bring along? Obviously, you couldn't bring along Grosjean now. Not after this episode. Or Maldonado. But you could bring along some celebrity chums, couldn't you? Come on,
Jolyon would come for sure. he's a good carter. I carted with Jolyon in Barcelona, actually.
You'd hope he was good in a go kart, wouldn't you?
He was ridiculously good. Yeah, annoyingly.
At the last one, who did we have? We had Alex Brundle and we had Bradley Philpott, and then we had a huge, huge gap back to the best of the rest, the mugs.
So I think Alex Brundle and Jolyon are quite friendly, from what I, because I think Martin Brundle spends a lot of time at the Bedford
at the
Jonathan Palmer
aerodrome. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So does that mean that they are of equal pace?
Don't know. I have no idea. Well, I'm sure between them they know who's quicker.
What do we have to
When's the next event?
Oh, interesting you should mention that. We are looking at a four race series over the F1 season next year, and I believe the first one is going to be towards the end of February. So it's going to be around testing time, and then there's going to be a spring one, a summer one, and then one nearer the end of the season. So I'm sure we can persuade you at some point. Now let's see, a more F1-y type question. Let's do that. Street circuits and the calendar. MG5909 ask, do you have any thoughts on the calendar expansion? What's too many races? And what would you change on the calendar? Because Liberty recently released a statement saying that they might drop some of the older tracks in favor of some more glamorous tracks. So this is kind of style over substance. Personally, for me, I don't like a street circuit. I can completely take it or leave it. I would have Monaco completely off of the point scoring calendar. I don't like Singapore. I don't like some of the, I don't want more Singapores. You're not with me, are you?
No, I kind of am actually, but this almost goes back to the Liberty Media model, because the races that you just mentioned, the Monacos and the Singapores, are the races that get more celebrity attendance. They're the races that are going to get more people looking at beautiful views of race cars going around harbours and at night under the lights. They're the things that are going to sell the media side of the business. They're the things that Liberty Media are going to be able to get lots of views on YouTube and on social media. So I can kind of see where they're coming from. The old school tracks are the ones that the purists love, the drivers love, but they don't necessarily fill the stands. So I remember 2014, 2015, Germany, was terrible. There was zero attendance there at Hockenheim. Even in Monza, the attendance isn't as good. But then you've got tracks, and I know we've talked about this before, like Bahrain, where the attendance is terrible, but that the government are backing the event by so much money that it makes financial sense for Formula One to be there. So it's kind of, I think it's a balance between traditional, making sure that the racing is still good, making sure that people still follow the sport, and also making sure that Liberty Media get the money that they need to get in. Now, they're never going to address it in as blunt a terms as I just have, but that's the offset. In terms of the number of races, 21 is a lot. And living it for 2.5 seasons, it's...
How many races did you have when you were...
I think we had 21 and 20. So maybe 21 both years. I can't remember. But that is literally, I would say that is literally breaking point. That is.
You reckon?
Yeah. I mean, the mechanics don't, they've got no life. I mean, so for me, it was almost a little bit easier because I could leave on a Friday or on a Thursday evening, no matter where the race was. I could be there on a Friday to meet with sponsors, to meet with the team. I was there Saturday. I generally leave on Sunday. Some of the guys that are setting the garage up need to be in the paddock or the pits on the Tuesday evening, Wednesday morning, to make sure the garage is ready for Thursday, which is media day. And they don't leave until, well, you see them starting to break the thing down before the race is even finished. If you ever look at the notebooks that Will Buxton and Ted Kravitz do, the thing is already being dismantled before the end of Sunday, because they need to get on to the next race. So those guys are a week in every 2 weeks away from their family and friends. And that's almost impossible to sustain. And if you add more into that, then you just end up, you almost end up with the fact that you would need two teams. You would need two teams of mechanics to go to the races. And that was the conversation that we used to have at Lotus. And therefore you're doubling the cost. So how does that help in terms of reducing cost for teams? Suddenly you've got two head mechanics, you've got two pit crews, you've got two, it just doesn't work.
Is there a case to say, okay, so that means that they are losing a little bit of quality of life, but that's just kind of what it takes to be in that trade. I mean, I'm going to do a bit of missed apex bingo here, but as an engineer, the only way to make proper money, really, like proper money, is to be away a lot and to do those overseas jobs. With F1, there's a certain glory and a certain life experience of doing that, and maybe you don't do it for as long. But isn't it kind of okay to say, being an F1 roadie engineer is just, it's hard work and you're away a lot?
You froze completely. I lost you.
You froze. I lost you.
Oh, sorry. I'll never do it again. Okay, so throw it back at you. I think I got the start of the question. So how long would you do that for? So if you had to be away from your family, and I know you're a family man, if you had to be away from your wife and your kids for 3 weeks in every four, because when you have a back-to-back grace, you're pretty much at that point. So you're at home for 1 week. How long do you think you could sustain that for? How many years? Even if you were earning a huge salary, but you're away, you're the other side of the world, you're constantly, your wife's looking at pictures of parties and of things that are going on, of the lifestyle, of the glamour, and you're the other side of the world. So how many years would you sustain that?
Oh, I can definitely
not seeing your kids grow up.
I can definitely answer that question, because as a ex-member of the armed forces, I was obviously away a lot, and as I got to the late 20s, I sort of realized that that is not conducive for a family life, and I stopped doing that. And I do see,
perfect. So the follow up to it is that the best mechanics, the best engineers, are the ones that have been in the sport for the longest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then you've got this huge trade off. So where do you go? The best strategist that we had was Ayo, who had been in the sport for 10, 15 years. He can't sustain doing that any longer. I mean, if you start adding more races in, you start impacting. So then you lose. So therefore, you've got a constant. It's constantly new engineers coming in, or it's new people that want to experience the F1 lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that's gonna diminish the quality of the people that are doing the job.
Chatroom rightly points out, you are assuming that everybody likes their family. Trumpets.
I just personally see having to bring new people in and hire lots of extra people with less experience is increasing the unpredictability of the race, therefore making it more exciting viewing. But I agree that's probably grasping a little bit. I don't know.
I agree. But then you're going to get the top teams giving more money to those guys, and they're going to be burning them out. But they're going to be saying, okay, you're the best engineer, so therefore we're going to throw double the salary at you. And you're going to have two divorces, and you're going to have like more kids that you don't see. Or it's going to impact on the sport. I genuinely think, and also I don't think, and again, you could completely disagree with this, but I don't think that you necessarily need more races. So would you prefer to have a race every single weekend?
Yeah, okay, go on then. No.
52 races in the year. Okay, so there's a point where you think, and they generally don't race over the winter, as we know. So you've got 2 months there. But they're pretty much, I mean, it's up there as one of the, it's the only global sport, truly global sport, fact. You know, it's that physically goes around the world. You know, other sports don't do that. So you're putting a lot of strain on the people that are doing it, even the drivers. I think Lewis said the other day that he wouldn't do it if it went to 25, didn't he? He said if 25 races would be his limit, he would drop out of that.
Okay, so let's speculate. Why does the number 25 keep on popping up with Liberty? What do you think might be behind their push for more races? Is it just more fees to make their maths work out? Or
yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, for them, it's of course it is. Yeah, it's. I mean, so again, I'm sure everyone understands this, and I apologize for dumbing it down, but Bernie, Liberty, they sell to the promoter. So the promoter here in Montreal pays a fee to have the race. As far as Liberty are concerned, they don't really care how many people attend the race, because the promoter's already paid them. The promoter's the one that gets the entrance fee. So as far as Bernie was concerned, when he was going to places like Bahrain, if Bahrain paid him for the race and nobody turned up, he didn't care. All they did was they turned it to a night race, so you couldn't see the stands and you couldn't see that they were empty. But he didn't care, because he'd got his fee already. So really, it's the promoter that wants to try and get more people through the door. So as far as Liberty are concerned, they're okay, fine, we've got our fee. So if they get another four fees, then they get, you know, it's another whatever it is, 15, 20% on top of what they're already getting in terms of income. They split that amongst the teams, some of it. So the teams are going to get more money. But equally, you're going to end up with burnout on some of these people. The team bosses. I mean, it's, you know, I'm sure I'm going to get a woe is you, but you know, I mean, the likes of Toto and Christian and people like that, they go to every single race, and you know, they're going from Melbourne to Singapore to Mexico to Montreal. I mean, they're literally all over the world every 2 weeks, and it's tough.
I do have this conversation with Joe Saywood when he complains about, you know, having to jet around the world and watch F1 all the time. I'm like, oh, poor Joe, you know, come in for a hug, Uncle Joe. But I understand, obviously, that does put a strain on people's lives and families. There is a good question from Ray Parker that came in through on Twitter.
It's quite Junior.
Ray Parker Jr. Is that a reference I don't get? I'm too young.
Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters theme. Surely you're not that young. Go on.
As far as I'm concerned, Ghostbusters is a movie about ladies who capture ghosts. That's because I'm much younger than you guys. Ray, no reference Parker, says, what is the likelihood that we will see Mr. Carter back in the paddock full time? Is it an ambition of yours to return to the circus? Or for the reasons you stated, is it a bit kind of a sick feeling of like, oh, goodness, no.
I would never definitely say no. I think it's difficult. And again, I'm sure we've had this conversation before, from what I did as team principal, team boss, there's only 10 positions.
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. There's only, whether I would go back as a lesser position, I don't think so. So therefore there's only 10 positions.
Wait a minute.
No. Majority of them are...
You're not right. There's only 10 positions as team principal, but there are potentially 13 spots for a team owner. That's where you come back next with Carter Racing.
Why 13? Oh, you mean because you can... Yeah. Extra entrance?
Yeah.
Missed Apex Carter.
Oh, dude, don't tease us. Come on, we've got drivers coming out of our back pockets here. Van Gene and Philpott on the grid in F1. That'd be amazing. Red and white livery, please.
Okay.
If you could, if you had the funding and the backing, would that ever tempt you to go, come on then, let's get a car on the F1 grid. See what I can do.
I'm not sure. The thing is that I have always been of the opinion when I was at Lotus and even the brief spell at Manor that I think that an F1 team could be profitable if it was managed in the correct way. If expectations were managed, if sponsors were dealt with, if you pitched it in the right way, then I think it could be profitable. Even that said, I think you'd have to have a few screws loose to attempt it. And I think everyone that has, you look at the likes of Eddie Jordan and Alan Prost and all those people that attempted to do it. There's not many of them that made any money. Most of them failed miserably.
I thought you were going to say Eddie Jordan tried it, and look at the state he's in now. I thought that's what you were going to say, and I was going to defend Eddie Jordan.
That as well.
Yeah, it does seem quite stressful. All right, well, I'm disappointed, but I can see there's a little glint in your eye, perhaps, that says that maybe there's a chance.
Listen, I think I as you know, and I'm sure it comes across, I think the sport's a great sport. I think there's potential there. It's also quite a messed up sport in terms of the business model and the business structure. You need a big backer or a big company to back the team to make it work, or a big sponsor, or you need to set your standards much, much lower than they are. And again, we touched briefly on Williams earlier on, and I hope that Williams go with Ocon and Russell. I'm not sure if they will. I'm not sure if anything's been announced actually in the last few days. Is Kubica... No, nothing.
Whoa, no. So Matt, don't shake your head. You fool. Clearly what? He knows something and he's just trying to establish what has already been released in the media and you're tipping us off. Tell us everything you know. What do you think? Okay, tell you what.
No, I don't. I've told you what I thought many, many times, that I think that Russell and Ocon would be the Williams drivers. I'm sure the last time we spoke, I think I said that.
Yeah, Joe seems to agree.
And I think that makes sense. I thought that I'd heard something recently that Kubica had managed to get the money together. My honest opinion is I think that would be the wrong decision for Williams. If they can financially make it work with Ocon and Russell, then I think that would be a great little pairing for them. I think it would help to bring the car back round where it should be, because I think they're getting a lot of misdirection from their two drivers at the moment.
I love the chat room. They've just gone, Carter confirms Kubica. Matt...
Okay, so let's talk about Ocon a little bit, and let's talk about Mercedes a little bit. Everybody is saying that it's Bottas who needs to be worried about his position, but do you think that Mercedes are grooming Ocon to come in and take over eventually for Bottas, or do you think they see him as a replacement for Lewis? And if so, if you were boss, how would you handle this?
I think that they will replace Bottas. Not sure who Bottas is. They'll replace Bottas with Ocon next year. 2020.
That was nearly breaking news.
I think that he and Hamilton will be together in the team for a while, and then gradually when Hamilton has won 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 titles, wherever he goes, that Ocon will be the one that steps forward and becomes the number one racer or the number one in that team. I don't think they'll replace Hamilton with Ocon until Hamilton gets to the point where he's had enough and he wants to walk away and go and sell clothes and music or whatever he wants to do. That being said, we don't know what Russell's going to be like in the car. Russell could turn out to be a superstar and he could be the one that pushes it forward. The same as Leclerc. At Ferrari, and Lando Norris at McLaren. You know, it's interesting. There's a whole wave of these young guys coming through, and it suddenly makes Ocon look not quite so young, and maybe he might get passed by. I think it's really important for him to be in a race seat next year, and there's really only one left, which is Williams.
Will you come back shortly into the off season and just have a general chit chat about what we think about the driver market and the winners and the losers out of 2018 and going forward into 2019?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no problem.
That'd be fantastic. No Matthew problem. Carter, thanks for joining us. You are definitely one of our most popular guests. The episodes that you come on for always generate loads of interest. It's fantastic. You have nothing to plug except your future upcoming Formula One team that you've already pretty much leaked here. But make sure you guys join us for our Abu Dhabi race review, which is next Sunday at 8 p.m. You can support us over the winter by staying subscribed, or you can even support us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/missedapex. And if you want to come iRacing with us, we've set up that session on Tuesday at 8 p.m. UK time. Just go to your iRacing UI, search for Map Race, and the password is Spanners. So that's S-P-A-N-N-E-R-S, all lowercase, and you can come racing with us from 8 p.m. If you want any more details or just to tip me off to expect you for that iRace, then email me spannersready@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook, Spanners Ready, or contact me on Twitter @SpannersReady. Until next time, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex with Matthew Carter and all those revelations. Oh, what headlines have we got from that, Matt? Carter reveals, confirms Kubica. We've got all sorts, haven't we?
I never said that.
There's loads. I tell you what, though, Matt, what we haven't done, and something that I have completely remembered and decided just to do after the show from now on, is Comment of the Week.
Comment of the Week.
And we have Mr. Carter here to help us pick a winner as well. Who are the nominees?
Chris Fonseca, over the winter, we need a serious discussion about who our next Stroll Goat should be for 2019. Asterisk, scapegoat.
Ah, our Stroll Goat. Why can't it still be Stroll?
I don't know.
He's going to be up against Perez. He's in for a hiding.
Yes.
No.
He was in again with, I was once in front of Ocon in a queue in a hotel. At no point did he try to overtake me.
Good. Well, he knows the rules there. He was not going to unlap himself in the hotel.
Exactly. Craig Alderson then was in regarding your moment of inspiration rap with, okay, that was the Missed Apex dad dancing moment.
Which unfortunately will get cut from the final video because it'll set off the copyright. So I've been saved there.
And then breaking news, Maldonado wasn't actually a good F1 driver.
Relations. Never said that he wasn't a good racing driver.
Well,
an amazing racing driver.
Let's see how
I said he wasn't consistent.
Let's see how the edit comes out. let's have a little look at that. Me and Steve will collaborate between the audio and video. However, can you pick a winner out of those, Mr. Carter?
I said the dad dancing one.
Grant Alderson.
Although no one...
But if you cut that out of the edit, then it's not going to make any sense.
No, it's fine because the comment will be there where we refer to the bit it was cut out. And who knows? All you've got to do is come to a Missed Apex karting event and there's plenty of dad dancing to be seen. So that's Craig Alderson. You're the winner of...
Comment of the Week.
Now go home, you lot. Don't you have anything better to do?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.